Well, what exactly is geoengineering and how does it affect us in all different ways? In a moment, Dane Wigington joins us. We're going to be talking about geoengineering in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. So many things are going on in the atmosphere. Chemical spraying, of course, chemtrails, HARP. Dane Wigington has an extensive background in solar energy. His personal residence was featured in a cover article in the world's largest renewable energy magazine, Home Power. He owns a 1,600-acre wildlife preserve next to Lake Shasta in California. Dane is the lead researcher for the geoengineeringwatch.org group and has investigated all levels of geoengineering. He has assisted, of course, Coast guest Michael Murphy with his production of What in the Hell Are They Spraying? Here's Dane Wigington on Coast to Coast. Dane, welcome. How are you?
Good, George. Thanks for giving me the chance to address this issue in depth.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it. And by the way, that video, What in the Hell Are They Spraying, was one of the best I've ever seen.
You Michael Murphy deserves the credit for that. And he sacrificed a lot and did a lot with a little on that. But thankfully, people are waking up to this issue, and it's getting more serious by the day.
It sure is. Now, when we hear the word geoengineering, what does that mean, Dave?
Yeah, most people have never even heard that term, but in this case, we refer to stratospheric aerosol geoengineering. Aerosols, in this case, a small particulate sprayed into the atmosphere, and the term basically, George, means that to try to engineer the climate on a global scale, and indeed, that is going on. All available data indicates that without reasonable doubt.
Do you think the pilots, those who are spraying, know what they're spraying?
From all indications we see, yes and no. In the case of military pilots, we certainly believe they would know what they're involved with, more so than any commercial pilots. And many ask, you know, are commercial carriers involved with this? But there's data online, for example, Project Cloverleaf. People can look this up, that indicate a program outline for non-profitable commercial routes to be kept in the air for use in these programs. And indeed, commercial carriers have been identified from the ground leaving a particulate trail. Again, this is not a condensation trail, but a particulate trail. Those carriers, you know, certainly appear to be involved, but we don't believe any commercial pilots or personnel would have any idea what's going on with these planes. Based on the data we've found so far, these systems would be automated and probably not involving direct knowledge of commercial pilots.
Now, the residue that comes from the traditional contrails, which is, of course, the vapor discharge coming off of a jet, normal, can they hurt you at all?
Well, certainly any type of combustion involving the fuels in question here are certainly not helpful. But in comparison with an intentional payload disbursement, George, a big difference, and this is a big argument with people, is it a contrail, is it a chemtrail? And again, chemtrail being the layman's term for geoengineering. But people should consider things, for example, if you're in a very cold day, you're walking down the street, your breath is condensing as you go, you don't look behind you and see a trail stretching out for the last mile and expanding and covering the horizon. And again, NOAA's original data for a naturally occurring, quote, condensation trail was 70 below and 70% humidity. They've since scrubbed that from the net, just like they do after a nuclear accident. They suddenly change the, quote, safe levels and up them by 10,000%. So, you know, the science is completely flexible when it comes to governmental agencies. But these trails that we see that linger and cover the sky to such a degree, George, that now global dimming, another term people aren't familiar with probably, is estimated right now to be 20%. That means 20% of the sun's direct rays are no longer reaching the surface of the planet. There's a hell of a lot of metal up there,
and
we know that for a fact from our testing.
We're going to get into that, too. That's a frightening statistic. When I left Los Angeles last week, I'm in St. Louis this week, I had not come across as many people as I did ever that just were sick. They had these respiratory coughs. They were sneezing. They were convinced they weren't sick, but they didn't know what it was. They said, gosh, we've never had allergies before. I'm not sure this is an allergy season. Is it possible, Dane, that some of the spraying contributes to things like that, where so many people just are sneezy, wheezy, itchy eyes and everything else, and it has the symptoms of an allergy?
It can't not be connected. It must be connected. And there are things, George, here that are absolutely beyond debate. There's a mountain of metal raining down on us. period. And, you know, the lab tests prove this in virtually every single test, and there's now hundreds from around the globe. We've taken 70 or 80 in the Northern California region, but there is absolutely a mountain of metal falling on us. It wasn't here before. In the last 10 years, we've seen rain test samples escalate from 7 parts per billion. This is in Shasta-Siskiyou counties in Northern California. 7 parts per billion, which is already very high given the location, up to 3,450 parts per billion. That's nearly a 50,000% increase in aluminum in the rain. I mean, it's absolutely staggering levels. So when you have this mountain of metal raining down on you, and there are nanoparticulates based on the patent's description of them, which are the most destructive. The smaller the particle, the more destructive the respiratory system. Now let's connect another dot. According to statistics from 2005 to 2010, respiratory mortality in the continental U.S. went from 8th on the list of mortality to 3rd.
Huge
leap. And sinusitis going off the charts, ADD, Alzheimer's, autism. I mean, as we see the metals go up that are directly related to these programs, based on all available data, we see all these ailments go right with it.
And obviously, it falls into the water supply system too, doesn't it?
It does. And, you know, it would be very helpful if these agencies and people in agencies would start to speak out. I personally was called into Northern California Environmental Waste for a closed-door meeting and shown test of the Sacramento River, the drinking water for Southern California, with massive spikes in aluminum. And I was asked not to release those tests, which I have not, but I'm speaking about the issue now. So this is the big elephant in the room. I've had meetings with fish and game biologists, California Fish and Game, that are beside themselves with this issue but afraid to speak out because they have no First Amendment protection. We do have a few courageous U.S. Forest Service biologists, one in particular that's retired recently, done water testing for 3.5 decades. And he has noted an aquatic insect life decline in the last 10-plus years, which he attributes to this metal from these programs of 90%. It's a virtual crash in aquatic insect life in Shasta-Siskiyou County. So, you know, we're seeing similar results across the planet. So, I mean, what goes up must come down, and there's no question it's coming down.
We wake up in the morning, the skies are clear. By the afternoon, the place looks like a tic-tac-toe pattern. Is that what we're talking about?
It is. And again, that's what got me onto this issue. I grew up in Southern California hacking on smog. All I could think about as a kid was getting the hell out of there. And when I finally made it to the Pacific Northwest and in 2001, completing this home in the wilderness and then seeing these grid patterns above my home, again, my background being in solar, some days losing 60, 70, 80% of my solar PV uptake from whatever these aircraft were emitting, and quickly came to the subject of geoengineering, started testing, and, you know, seeing that the elements named in the patents were exactly what was showing up on the ground. And this is called solar obscuration, George. That's the goal of geoengineering, to block the sun. And indeed, we have solid and indisputed scientific data stating, again, 20% of the sun's direct light is no longer reaching the surface of the planet. Some regions, it's even higher. So virtually every single dot connects. And for those that choose to say this isn't happening, they're simply putting their head somewhere where the sun doesn't shine.
Well, now, geoengineering, watch.org, tell me about that.
That's the site where we try to put out all geoengineering data, no politics. And that site would not have happened without a couple individuals, Mauro Oliveira, Yvonne Noctegala, you know, really a saint of a woman who helps us put that site together. But our goal is simply to put out data on geoengineering, no politics. And this is the case because after a decade of study, George, I didn't just choose this issue because it felt comfortable to me. This is the last battle I ever wanted to face. But after one examines this data to a certain degree, the conclusion is reached that short of thermonuclear catastrophe, there is no more immediate or more dire threat to all life on Earth than these programs. They're thwarting the web of life from the atmosphere to the ground, from microbes in the atmosphere, which they're just learning about, and their effect on climate, to soil microbes and everything in between. So at a certain point, when you realize you can't walk out the door and breathe without sucking in a lung full of heavy metal, you know that you have no choice but to try to stand and scream out.
If they're modifying the weather day, why are they doing it, and why aren't they telling us?
Well, I think they're not telling us for obvious reasons, like they don't tell us about 100 other things that we now know that have happened in the past with the military-industrial complex. Many layers to the onion as far as why they are doing this. From all available data, it looks like they started these programs as far back as the late 40s. It looked like, as always, such programs start for a desire for more control and power. And my conclusions are, as these programs evolved and were used strategically, more and more damage has begun to occur in the atmosphere. The atmosphere is horrifically damaged now, by the way, and this is not about Al Gore or carbon credits. It's about reality. So it appears, to fast forward to right now, they have triggered things that cannot be stopped. They have triggered climate feedback loops, and not to say that there hasn't been other damage to the planet. Certainly human beings have done plenty to harm the system overall. But that being said, the greatest single factor in climate disruption right now that is not being acknowledged by almost any scientific entity is geoengineering. And now it appears they've damaged the climate so horrifically, and they are trying desperately to spray more and manipulate more to try to cover up the damage they've already done. And that's a pretty vicious circle.
Well, it sure is. With this weather modification, how do we know they're not trying to control the population? You know, the ability to reproduce in men has dramatically decreased. How do we know this isn't affecting them?
Well, I think we do know that it is affecting those aspects. And as far as that being part of an agenda, one can only conclude, we've seen studies from the Navy and Air Force on the effect of these nanoparticulates from, I believe, the late 90s. Roslyn Peterson, excellent researcher. I know you know her, and she's dug up a lot of this data. But so we know that they knew the harmful effects. That's common knowledge at this point, and they continue to spray anyway. So at minimum, one can only conclude that this massive health implication for life on Earth is either an accepted consequence or perhaps, worse yet, even a desired objective. But we know now also that it's not just these metals, aluminum, barium, strontium, that we've identified. But there's a toxic synergism between these metals and other metals that we're exposed to, like mercury in the vaccines, mercury that we inhale from the burning of hydrocarbon. And we were given studies that indicated if you combine aluminum with mercury under the right conditions, toxicity can increase up to 10,000%. So it's not just the lethalness of either metal independently. When they are combined, they become much more harmful.
And with geoengineering, is it primarily the spraying and the weather modification, or does it include other things that they're doing?
Well, on the weather modification, that involves many aspects as well. And we look back in the last few years, the NATO countries are certainly up to their eyeballs in this. And it appears we have competing powers now as well, Russia and China. And that includes with the ionosphere heaters, the HAARP installations. We think there might be as many as 18 around the globe right now. So on the strategic implications, in recent years, we've seen countries, for example, like Pakistan, when they seem to be showing resistance to U.S. objectives, suddenly 20% of their country's underwater. In Thailand, a similar circumstance. The Thai government was reluctant to allow the U.S. to put a, quote, weather observation base there, which they probably realized was a weather modification base. Okay. And suddenly Thailand's under record floods and underwater. And so these dots do seem to connect. You have the Haiti situation, you know, where the U.S. immediately moved in there after catastrophe. And it's just interesting, the coincidences here. And it certainly seems they would be anything but. So a lot of these dots seem to connect, and these programs seem to be being used for many purposes today.
Are they war machines, Dane?
When you have documents, George, like Owning the Weather, you've probably heard of that document, a U.S. military document stating the strategic purposes of owning the weather, and you have people like Ahmadinejad going in front of the U.N., I believe twice now, and speaking to the fact that he believes his country is being droughted out by these programs. They can only be described as weapons of war. But when those weapons are turned on a country's own population, in the case of the drought in the continental U.S., and the drought is becoming very protracted, we post on Geoengineering Watch satellite photo images of the eastern Pacific almost daily, the blanket spraying that's occurring over the eastern Pacific. The data is clear on this, George. When you blanket spray like that in the atmosphere, you basically thwart the hydrological cycle, the rain cycle. And so we see this drought expanding, and we see the direct result. When it's like the farmer in 1850s blocking the stream so the downstream guy starves out and then his land is bought up. We see similar circumstances like this happening, and all the objectives we can only speculate on, but we know by seeing the satellite data that they are, in fact, completely disturbing the hydrological cycle with what they're doing.
This is scary stuff, Dane, isn't it?
It is to me. It's, you know, I feel there's no greater or more immediate threat, or I would not have put a decade of my life on hold for this issue.
Does it appear that all administrations are supporting geoengineering?
It does. It does. Now, we've seen big ramp-ups at certain points. 1998 was a very warm year, and we saw a huge ramp-up of geoengineering after that point. We saw another one in 2005, 2006, and then 2008, 2009. There's various points where there appeared to be additional ramp-ups. But we're getting reports now, even in recent weeks, from all over the globe that most places are seeing considerably intensified spraying. And we are also seeing weather events, for example, the parade of named snowstorms that the Weather Channel now is creating their theater from. And that's another subject, George, called artificial ice nucleation, i.e. artificially induced snowstorms. We can talk about that if you wish.
Artificially induced snowstorms. Now, what would the purpose be for that?
Well, this is something that there can be a number of reasons for as well. One can be to create the semblance of winter. Two, to increase the Earth's albedo, the Earth's reflectivity. As ice is lost around the globe, the Earth's albedo is diminished, the reflectivity, so more of the sun's thermal energy is absorbed. We know these programs shred ozone. I don't want anybody to believe a word I'm saying. I hope people look up every single thing I mention in this broadcast. But the data to confirm that particulates in the upper atmosphere shred ozone is really undisputed. So we have a shredded ozone layer, we have more of the sun's thermal energy coming in, and so perhaps it's a means to try to, in desperation, increase the Earth's albedo, and the ice nucleation also cools down the air masses involved. And the Chinese openly announced they were doing this. People can look this up. Look up Chinese create artificial snowstorm, or Chinese scientists create artificial snowstorm. They were quite vocal about it until they did $1 billion worth of damage to Beijing, and then they shut up. But this is the same as a person's first aid kit, chemical first aid ice pack that sits on their shelf for 20 years at room temperature. You mix the chemicals together, you have ice. And people should note that we're seeing snow falling at 39 degrees, 40, 44, 45. Weather Channel regularly reports this, and they spent some pretty interesting episodes trying to explain why this is happening. But quite simply, we can see on radar when masses of bands of rain are being nucleated because it just flashes out the snow for no reason. No orographic enhancement, which is mountain ranges that the rain would ride up over and you'd expect snow. Nothing. Just from nowhere, a band of rain will flash out the snow, and the Weather Channel calls it heavy wet snow. That's a new term because this snow is like concrete. It's much more moisture-laden because of the artificial nucleation. It crushes trees, drops power lines, collapses roofs. It's not natural, and people are noticing this, George.
Well, they sure are. Now, have you done laboratory tests on what you think might be the particles that are falling from these sprays?
Yes. Now, a great deal of tests have been done. I've done probably 4 dozen myself, but other people in this area, this Forest Service biologists, have done testing, and we see testing now from across the globe. Elements that show up every time, aluminum, barium, strontium, every time they're tested for. I've been contacted by researchers from Norway and Germany that are testing there as well. And in their last, I believe, 60 rain tests, they are now seeing fluoride, abundant amounts of fluoride, and they have eliminated any possible industrial source. So it appears that fluoride now may be in the mix. Now, there could be a number of reasons for this. You know, the obvious one, perhaps if we won't drink it in the water, they'll rain it down on us. But
let's come back in a moment, Dan. Let's get into all these particles on Coast to Coast AM when we return. Our television program is called Beyond Belief. It airs on Friday, 7 o'clock Eastern Time, internet-based, and you can see it for 10 days free and also take advantage of thousands of specialized videos that you can also take a peek at for 10 days free. Simply go to coasttocoastam.com, click Hosts at the top. It opens up and it says TV, and there you go. Take it away. That's also GaiamTV.com/George, GaiamTV.com/George. And welcome back to Coast, Dana Wigington with us. Dana, we were talking about some of the elements that showed up in lab tests. I'll let you pick up from there again.
What I was mentioning before the break, George, was recently from, again, I'm being told from Norwegian and German researchers that they found fluoride in the last 60 tests. They've eliminated any industrial source, can't account for even a fraction of it. And one potential use of that, based on their study so far, is that if fluoride nanoparticles are exposed to certain frequencies, they believe they coagulate, which would come together. So in theory, if you had a, when you fill the atmosphere with these aerosols, you diminish and disperse rainfall. As the rain comes across the Pacific Northwest, I mean, we are sprayed here extremely heavily. This is the storm track. And in the last, my particular location in the last 7 years, we're almost 200 inches of rain short in my particular location. So this rain is migrated over us in the form of a very expansive, industrial, toxic-looking cloud. And if it was seeded with the right particulates, in this case perhaps fluoride, and it's exposed to the right frequencies from an ionosphere heater like HARP, and they coagulate, then they could, in essence or in theory, cause precipitation to begin to fall again wherever they chose. So, again, there's aspects of this we can only speculate on, the fact that they're doing it and the fact that we're all being exposed to a grand experiment without our choice or consent and ingesting or inhaling this metal that's slowly but surely clogging up our organisms. That part is beyond debate, but the other aspects of these programs are probably many, and we probably only know a few.
How do we know that we're not truly hurting the environment? Let's put us aside for a second, Dane. What about the environment itself? What are we doing to it by doing this?
Well, you know, if we go back to in 2010, I attended an international geoengineering conference, and the world's most recognized geoengineer, David Keith, was there. And he was caught on film, and this is in Michael Murphy's first film, What in the World Are They Spraying? But on film, after a 3.5-hour symposium as a proponent of geoengineering and pushing the proposal of dumping 20 million tons of nanoparticulates into the atmosphere annually, at the end of this 3.5-hour symposium, they allowed three questions of many journalists. I got one in, and my question was, has any study been done? Human respiratory, environmental toxicity, anything? And after trying to dodge the question, his answer finally was patently no. He said, could terrible things happen tomorrow? We don't know. What kind of a statement is that from a scientist? So as far as what's happening to the environment, it couldn't be worse. When you saturate the environment with this bioavailable mix of metals, many of the destructive factors we know, many we can't yet know, but we are seeing a really sharp decline in the boreal forests. Those are the northern latitude forests. That's the terrestrial lungs of the planet. Decreased oxygen output from these trees because they're dying. And when the trees sense bioavailable aluminum, for example, many of them virtually shut down. So the elephant in the room goes hidden. You have Forest Service and other people saying, well, it's the beetles killing the trees. But the beetles are only a symptom of a tree that's extremely weak from drought, from altered photosynthesis because the particulates change the light wavelength form and block much of the sun, and from virtually being poisoned from this toxin in the rain. So, again, aquatic insect life decline, amphibian decline, the forest, George, and I've grown up, spent many years in the forest, and it's so silent now. You rarely hear a bird. It's eerily silent. And in the last 10 years, it's absolutely scary. And on that note, by the way, latest figures state that the species extinction rate today is approaching perhaps 200 a day. That's 10,000 times natural background extinction. I mean, shouldn't there be red flags going up?
That's frightening. And if it's happening to animals and insects, it could be happening to us.
It is. It is. And you have the respiratory sinusitis, chronic sinusitis, is virtually epidemic around the globe now. And with the quantity of these materials, people should consider, when you look up and you see a sky that doesn't have, that's not blue and the clouds aren't white, it's just this dirty, wispy-looking mix, those are aerosol clouds. And there's no set example of this. Just because you don't see trails from horizon to horizon doesn't mean you're not breathing aerosols. If the sky, if you live in a location that's not prone to smog like LA, and the sky is this dirty, hazy mix, those are aerosols. They blanket spray over the ocean, for example, on the West Coast, and this stuff blows in. It looks almost like a fire has happened somewhere, and people should take note of this because that's what aerosols look like. Smoke is aerosols, and it has a similar appearance. So this stuff's blowing in from everywhere, and the effect it's having on the environment is absolutely cataclysmic. And you can bend a branch so far, George, and finally it breaks. And we are really seeing that breaking point starting to happen in the ecosystems. I mean, things are virtually crashing.
Let's talk a little bit about global dimming. You brought it up earlier. Exactly what is that then?
Global dimming, again, refers to the amount of the sun's direct rays that no longer reach the surface of the planet. And it, once again, I encourage people to verify what I am saying. This is hard science. The latest figures show some 20%. Now, you can find scientific publications that will dispute anything and everything, but the vast majority of data corroborates the figures of in the range of 20%. So as you diminish sunlight, you diminish evaporation. No question, it's the light photons that break the water molecules loose that help cause evaporation. Now, another thing that's known about geoengineering is it diminishes wind as well. So along with the global dimming, you have reduced wind, which also reduces evaporation. So even though overall the planet is getting warmer, and again, I'm not a Gore fan, but that's a fact that I think few dispute at this point, it should be raining more, not less. And the only reason it can be raining less is an atmosphere full of particulates. And it doesn't matter what the particulates, how they got there. Mount Pinatubo in 1992, it was a large eruption, but not on a cataclysmic scale. But just that eruption alone made 92 up to that date was by 50% the lowest rainfall year ever recorded from those particulates. So geoengineering has the same effect. And people can look this up. They can Google geoengineering diminishes wind and rain, and they'll find plenty of data. So it's altering, again, the photosynthesis, diminishing the sun's direct light. The toxins in this rain are loading the soils with bioavailable metals that are absolutely wreaking havoc. So, again, from bottom to top, geoengineering is absolutely wreaking havoc in the web of life.
Dane, what is this spider web appearance that we see sometimes in the morning? It's kind of glisteny, but it just looks like there's spider webs everywhere.
On the surface?
On the surface, yeah. It looks like it just has fallen all on the grass or on little bushes.
Yeah, we've seen that on occasion, and what is felt from that is, and I know a polymer chemist that's chimed in on this as well, but one of the patents, a primary patent, George, called stratospheric Welsbach seeding for reduction of global warming. In that patent, in addition to aluminum oxide and other toxic heavy metals, polymer fibers are called for as part of this mix in order to help suspend those particles in the air. And we believe that perhaps when this happens, which is only occasionally in various locations, but perhaps these mechanisms that combine these elements, jam, clog, or otherwise malfunction, and these polymer fibers are what we're seeing on the ground. We have tested some of that fibrous mix before, and it's packed full of aluminum. We know that for sure. Spiders don't weave aluminum webs. And we're also seeing a chemical residue when this nucleated snow melts, and many people have reported this. There's like a cobweb below the melted snow, and that's, again, appears to be a chemical residue. So all of this leads back to geoengineering, and quite simply, the effect it's having on everything from colony collapse disorder in the bees. Certainly, it's attributed to various chemicals and a lot of scapegoats there. I'm not saying the chemicals are helping the situation or GMO foods, certainly crops rather destructive to the bees. But when you live in a location like I do, I'm many, many miles from any such location, and our bees are just as dead. So this is obviously a much bigger issue.
Well, there's no question about that. What do you see with all of this that's going on as the biggest issue, the biggest problem?
Biggest problem in relation to geoengineering?
Mm-hmm.
That's a hard one to nail down, because you have the ionosphere heaters in the attempt to steer the jet stream, which they do appear to be doing quite effectively, destructively as well. So you have ionosphere heaters around the globe, and for those that don't know what that is, these massively powerful radio frequency installations that are, according to the data, can heat the ionosphere areas hundreds of square miles to 15,000 degrees or more. It causes a chain reaction in the ionosphere. It causes a bulge in the atmosphere by heating it, which creates pressure zones below, and that can steer the jet stream. So, and that's part of geoengineering. These ionosphere heater facilities around the globe, again, which we believe there's at least 18. So you have the atmosphere being ripped apart, literally, by these programs. Then you have the saturation of particulates, which, again, is shredding ozone, thwarting the hydrological cycle, poisoning everything in the ground. And now, to lead up to your question, the feedback loops that appear to have been triggered in part by these programs, George, which are global game changers. One, no ozone layer, no life on Earth. That's a given. And we're heading that direction. We're seeing the bark burn off of trees in Northern California from top to bottom. Native trees in the southwest side, the bark is literally burn off, and it's increasing in intensity all the time. So you have an ozone destruction that could literally eliminate life on Earth at some point. Now you have methane mass expulsion. You have these geoengineering programs which alter wind patterns, which then in turn alter ocean currents, and now you have warm water feeding into the Arctic. And we're seeing, based on methane satellite data imagery, very significant amounts of methane being expelled into the atmosphere from the East Siberian Shelf of the Arctic. And this is fairly well documented. If people look up Arctic Methane Emergency, there's a group called the AMIG group, the Arctic Methane Emergency Group, that's screaming at the top of their lungs. And I agree with them on the data and the crisis in that regard, but they are calling for immediate wartime-scale geoengineering, as if it hasn't been going on for 60 years. So somebody's living in a closet. And, you know, this is where I diverge from any agreement with them, but the methane alone is a global game-changing event. It appears to be triggered, and if the data is correct, and it appears to be, we will see a rapidly unfolding situation in a planet that is very different from what we have known.
Is this like a suicidal mission, Dane? Is there somebody out to get us?
Looking at human behavior, and I've looked at this in depth. I've talked about this a lot in various forums. I've read a couple in-depth psychoanalysis. Those in power, I don't think any of us disagree that those at the top are not sane. And one aspect of the psychoanalysis I've read, George, was the common thread between various forms of psychosis of those in power. And I'm quoting directly here from this analyzation I've read, a complete lack of comprehension as to the consequences of their actions, even to themselves. So we're not dealing with sanity in that regard. Two, a lot of compartmentalization, where people that are involved with these programs have no idea what they're doing. I certainly believe that's the case. I don't believe our military brothers and sisters would intentionally do this to us. I don't believe that for a minute. I believe they're being told they're involved with some benevolent planet-saving act for the common good. And I plead with them to investigate this issue. So somewhere at the top, you have a few people that aren't sane that might perhaps realize this is going on, but on the other hand, might be being told by scientists that clearly live in bubbles. I know enough of them to know that are not considering the consequences of their actions. Why else would they detonate 1,800 nuclear weapons around the planet, blowing up tropical islands and filling the atmosphere with particulates? Why would they do Project Starfish in the 50s and 60s that detonated hydrogen bombs in the magnetosphere just to see what would happen? So we're not dealing with sanity, and I think at a certain point they didn't intend to trigger these climate feedback loops, and I think now they're desperately trying to shut them off, a very futile effort, because they realize that they have pushed the envelope so far that they've torpedoed their own ship.
Do genetically modified foods, are they affected by any of this? Is there a tie-in with them?
Well, we have Monsanto. Michael Murphy covered this in his film quite well. I believe companies like Monsanto, George, are simply the vultures feeding on the carcass. They're not the players that are directly involved with this, but they're certainly involved with trying to be disaster capitalists from it. So as we have this geoengineered drought created in the farmlands of America, and we have soils being altered with bioavailable aluminum, what does Monsanto come out with? Aluminum and drought-resistant seeds. So that doesn't seem like a coincidence from where I'm standing, and certainly there are other companies that appear to be trying to capitalize this. In Australia, there were regions that were droughted out so badly, we believe from geoengineering, that whole areas were sold for pennies on the dollar, towns and everything, and Big Ag bought everything, and now the rain's falling again. So, you know, this is nothing new. I mean, money and power instill the same ill motives, always.
Tell me about the Venus syndrome, Dane.
Venus syndrome is something I just did an article on, and again, that ties back in with the methane issue to a large degree. But in Venus syndrome, and this is a scientific scenario, this is not a metaphor, and...
And this is real.
Well, yes, we're on this track right now. All available data indicates we are on track for Venus syndrome right now. Now, we need to get off that track, and that's why geoengineering needs to stop. The planet needs to be taken out of the straitjacket that it's in, which it literally is with geoengineering, and none of its natural systems are functioning right now. So to get off the track for Venus syndrome, which is a scenario in which feedback loops are triggered that begin to feed on themselves, and that's an example of that. Again, we have a diminished ozone layer. We have more of the sun's thermal energy coming in right now, and we believe that is largely a result of geoengineering and not so much a result of the CFCs that it's been blamed on. So more thermal energy coming in, Arctic ice cap is melting, and indeed it is melting. And for those that doubt that, they simply have not done their research. This is not the little tiny ice shelf in Antarctica that's growing slightly. This is the implosion of the Arctic ice. This summer, George, at the end of the melt season, the ice cap was melting at a rate of about 130,000 square kilometers a day. So the sun is losing, or the Earth is losing its reflectivity. So more thermal energy penetrates. Instead of 90% being reflected from the sea ice, 90% is absorbed. That heats the ocean, along with the currents I mentioned before that are being altered and hampered by geoengineering. Now you have thawing methane on the seafloor. These are methane hydrates. Methane expels through the sea into the atmosphere and begins to cover the planet in what amounts to a layer of glass. Methane is over a 10-year time horizon, and most scientists don't refer to a 10-year time horizon. They refer to a 100-year time horizon, where methane is 20 times more potent than CO2. Over a 10-year time horizon, it's 100 times more potent. That's like covering the planet with a layer of glass. So it traps all the heat below. Sun comes in, doesn't get out, starts to feed on itself, gets warmer, more methane releases, more heat. You see the cycle. That's Venus syndrome, and it doesn't stop until the Earth finds equilibrium, as Venus has at 900 degrees Fahrenheit. So people think this is outlandish, but this is absolute potential science fact. And Venus actually, for the record, absorbs less of the sun's thermal energy than Earth because it has 2.5 times the albedo, the reflectivity of Earth. So Venus is more reflective than Earth, actually absorbs less sun than Earth does, but it's 900 degrees. That's because its atmosphere has all been, everything on the surface, with oceans that were thought to be in Venus, have all, due to feedback loops, been put into the atmosphere, and now Venus is what it is. So that's Venus syndrome.
All right, I want to talk with you a little bit about HAARP next hour, Dane, when we come back and really get into that. Would you give us your website?
Our website is geoengineeringwatch.org. All geoengineering, no politics.
Simple as that. You got to tell me a little bit about your 1,600-acre wildlife preserve as well. Sounds like that's been a pet project of yours, hasn't it?
It's hard to see it die before your eyes from these programs, George. It's truly hard.
It is sad indeed. Stay with us. Dane Wigington, our special guest, as we talk about geoengineering, crop spraying, and chemtrails, and you name it, altering with GMOs. It's all in there. We'll be back.